Hi, good morning everybody. How are you? Today I want to talk about the Dust Bowl, which happened in the 1930s in the center of North America. I'm going to do it in 10 minutes because it's too big a topic to cover in 5 minutes. Don't forget, if you click on the link down in the description, you can find the script for this. You can find questions and answers. Please try the questions. You can practice your listening skills and your writing skills. Your English will improve if you try that. Okay, here we go. 10 minutes on the Dust Bowl. 3, 2, 1, go. Okay, I live in Japan here right now, and every year we have a problem with sand blowing across from China, from basically the Gobi Desert. Happens once or twice a year. The particles of sand blow across and our things get covered in sand. It only happens a couple of times a year. Why is that relevant? Well, you'll find out in a little bit. Okay, let's talk about America. We're going to talk about the plains of America. The plains are the central part of central North America. America is basically a bowl shape. You've got mountains over here, and it's flat in the middle. That flat bit is the plains. It spreads from Canada in the top down as far as Mexico. Because the plains are in the center of the American continent, the North American continent, they suffer from continentality. What that means is that the center of continents don't have the warming and cooling influences of the sea, so they get much hotter. They have more extremes of temperature. They get very hot in the summer, very cold in the winter. And this area, of course, has very strong wind, and it's also very susceptible to droughts. Now, this is going to become important in a minute as well. So, before Europeans went over there, on the plains you had buffalo, you had grass, and the Native Americans lived there, of course. Buffalo are extremely hardy animals. They can survive very hot summer temperatures, they can survive very cold winter temperatures. They're very well adapted for that area. The grass, of course, the grass can survive in the heat and the cold, but the grass can also survive through the droughts, because their roots go down hundreds of meters into the water table, far down below the ground. So even if it doesn't rain for years at a time, the grass can survive. And what grass does, of course, is it holds the land together. The Native Americans who lived there, they hunted the buffalo. They would kill one or two buffalo, and they would use all of the buffalo, the bones, the meat, the fat, the hide, everything. They wouldn't waste a single thing. Okay, after about 1850, the Americans start to spread into central North America. They've colonized California, they live in California, and now they're heading towards the center part. But of course, the Native Americans live in that part, so they have to get them off the land. And one way they do that is to hunt the buffalo. Now, the railroad has spread into this area by now, so it's very easy for people to get there and to transport things. So they go and they hunt the buffalo. When I say hunt, I don't mean they kill one or two. In 1870, they kill 5 million buffalo. 5 million. That's almost the entire population of buffalo. By the end of 1880, there were only about 500 buffalo left. They've recovered a little bit by now, but in 1880, there were only about 500 buffalo. So the Native Americans had nothing to hunt. So the Native Americans had to move to different parts of the land. Now, the American government wanted people to live in that part of the land, because to control land, you have to have your people living there. So they sold, well, they basically gave away Native American land. They gave it to these people. So a lot of Americans uprooted their families, and they moved into central North America. They were basically conned to go there. The government told them that they would be able to grow crops, that they would be able to farm, and that it would be beautiful and rainy and green and wonderful, which of course was a lie. But anyway, hundreds of thousands of people move into that area, and they start to make cities and communities, and they start to farm. Now, the best thing to farm in that area, they discovered, was wheat. There was a particular type of wheat came across from Russia, which was very hardy. It grew very well in those kind of conditions. It wasn't hardy enough, as we'll find out soon, but that's what they started to plant. So, they plowed up the grass and they put down wheat. They used horse-drawn plows and they plowed up the grass and they put down wheat and they started to grow wheat. Now, at that time, in Europe, we have World War I happening. And the Russian Revolution happens, of course, in 1918. And what that does, of course, once the revolution starts, Russia stops producing its wheat. And because of World War I, Europe and Russia stop producing wheat. So American wheat prices, of course, go up. Now, what happens when prices of something go up? More people want to start selling it. You have a bubble develop. So more people move into these areas drawn by the rumors, by the reports of high prices of wheat. They go in and they plow more land and plant more wheat. Now, when you have a bubble, people without money, they want to get in on the action. They have to borrow money. So banks start appearing to lend people money. People use that money to buy wheat and to buy machines. They start buying tractors. And the tractors, of course, can do in a day what a horse would take weeks to do. So they start to plow even more land. They rip up more grass. They plant more wheat. Now, of course, supply and demand, you have a lot of wheat now. The prices are going to start coming down. And once World War I and the Russian Revolution are sorted out, Russia starts producing wheat again, and American wheat prices go down. Now, if the price of something drops and your entire livelihood depends on that one crop, what can you do? Well, you can quit, which obviously you can't do because you owe money to the bank, or you can grow more wheat. So basically, people started doubling the amount of wheat they were growing. They started plowing up even more land to grow more wheat. And of course, more wheat on the market means the prices start to come down even more. And it reaches the point where it costs more to grow the wheat than you can get from selling the wheat. You cannot make a profit. And what do people do here? There is nothing they can do. They cannot grow wheat anymore. And the banks, of course, have lent people money. The banks want their money back. But the people cannot pay the money back because they're not selling any wheat. They're not making any money. So the banks start to foreclose on houses. And then the banks themselves start to collapse. Of course, in this time, 1929, you have the Great Depression. The whole American economy starts to collapse. But in the central part of North America, it's basically caused by the wheat prices. So banks start to collapse. At the same time, you have a drought. Now, droughts have been happening in that area since time immemorial, but they don't last very long. But this drought starts in about 1929, and it ends up lasting 9 or 10 years. 9 or 10 years with very little rain. So once the wheat prices have collapsed and you cannot sell wheat, you have two choices. You can leave the area, which about 300,000 people do. They travel into California, other areas of America, but of course there are no jobs there either. Or you can stay. But of course you're staying in drought conditions. There are no food. You cannot grow anything. Anything you grow will die. There is no water. So basically you're living in a desert. Now, when people leave, they leave their farms. They leave their plowed land. They don't plant wheat anymore. Does the grass grow back? Of course not. They've ripped up the soil to plow it. Does the wheat grow? No, it's too dry. So what happens? Well, basically, it turns into a desert. You have all these plowed farms that are abandoned, and it becomes a desert. As we know with deserts, especially in windy areas, the wind blows up the sand, blows up the topsoil. And they started to get dust clouds that would be 3 kilometers high. These dust clouds would blow up, and because dust creates static electricity, it would attract more dust, and more dust would attract more dust, and you had these giant clouds of dust that would just fly across cities. They would cover cities in a fog of sand for days at a time. And because of the static electricity, the whole area was charged. You couldn't shake people's hands because of the static electricity. You couldn't touch metal doorknobs. It was a terrible situation. Now, of course, because the dust is blowing, the sand is blowing, the soil is blowing, it starts to drift. And whole farms get covered in sand, and buildings get covered in sand. And of course, the sand goes inside houses. You cannot seal a house against dust. You cannot seal it. It goes through cracks in windows, through cracks in wood. Everything in your house gets covered in dust. Your food gets covered in dust. Your clothes get covered in dust. If you leave out water, it gets covered in dust. And of course, people breathe it. Now, I talked about Japan, where we have these dust clouds come from China once or twice a year. These dust clouds in America were happening every month, every week, sometimes for days at a time. And you breathe the dust. So most people would have a cough all the time. People would crack ribs because they would cough so much. And young and old, particularly the young, they would die of something called dust pneumonia. They would have so much dust in their lungs that they would die. And about 7,000 children died of this disease. And the dust was everywhere. Google it, look at pictures. It's absolutely incomprehensible. And sometimes it would rain, but it would rain dust and water. Sometimes it would snow, but it would snow dust and snow. The dust was absolutely everywhere. It controlled people's lives. Now, everyone else in America was concerned with the Great Depression, and things started to recover. They weren't really thinking about Central America, Central North America. But then the dust cloud started to spread. April the 14th, 1935, a day known as Black Sunday, the dust clouds spread as far as New York and Chicago. About 12 million tons of dust were dropped on Chicago. At daytime in New York, it was dark, and people started to sit up and realize what was happening. And FDR, Roosevelt, his advisors came up with some ideas to try and help the situation. He planted 2 million trees from Canada down to Texas as a windbreak, because they needed to stop this wind. They sent in food aid, lots and lots of food aid. They educated the farmers about crop rotation. They imported grasses from Africa, hardy desert grasses. They imported those and started to plant them. Time's up, sorry. I've almost finished. I can't stop my thingy. They imported these African grasses, which were hardy. They tried to plant the grasses to hold the soil together. They educated the farmers. They tried as hard as they could to fix it. And gradually, over time, they have slowly repaired the land. A lot of the areas of the Central Plains now are covered in grass, but many areas are still not fixed. It's 70, 80 years since then, and we still have dust storms coming around in that area. The dust is still picked up. 1939, the drought finished, and people could finally start planting again. But so many people died, so many people had to move, so many people starved, so many people died of dust pneumonia. All because, in a very short period of time, humans destroyed the ecosystem. Because of greed, because of ignorance, they destroyed the ecosystem. Now, it's very easy for me to say that looking back. Hindsight is 2020, of course. But we are doing exactly the same thing all over the world. We are destroying the ecosystem because of greed, because of ignorance. In the future, is somebody going to be looking back at what we're doing to the world and talking in the same way? Are we going to experience something like the Dust Bowl on a global stage? What's going to happen in the future? There is no way of knowing. But we have to learn from lessons like that and look at what we're doing to the world and try to repair things before they break. We have to try. Anyway, thank you. That was very interesting. I hope you understood that. If you have any questions or any topics you'd like me to talk about, please put them in the comments section below here. If you click on the link in the description, you can find the script for this talk. You can find questions and answers. Have a look at the questions. Try them. You can improve your listening skills and your writing skills. Please try them. If you liked this, click like, share it to your friends. If anybody you know wants to study English, send it to them. If you want to subscribe, click subscribe. Thank you. I'll see you next week. Goodbye.